Welcome to the podcast of the Student Christian Movement. SCM is a community of students, past and present, and it is community that is at the heart of who we are and how we do things. Based in the UK, our vision of SCM is as a generous community, expressing a lived faith in Jesus Christ where social action meets prayerful devotion. We seek to be both a radical voice for equality and justice, and a safe home for progressive Christian students. Hello and welcome back to the SCM podcast. Today I'm really excited to have Craig Gardner on the podcast with us. So thanks for coming on today, Craig.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So today we're going to be talking a little bit about your book Melodies of a New Monasticism and the kind of intersection of Bonhoeffer's thought with the Iona community and George MacLeod, the founder of the Iona community. But before we get into that, could you tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in the north of Ireland. I came to Wales to study law. Then I ended up training for Baptist ministry. So I'm an ordained Baptist minister, and I now teach theology in a Baptist college, training ministers, but also in Cardiff University. And along the way, I married my Scottish wife, and we now have two Welsh children, which bodes well, except on the Six Nations time. And then everyone [S2] Yep. [S1] Retreats to their preferred corners of red or green or blue. But yeah, so that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, it seems like we've got a lot of affinities there. My wife is from Northern Ireland, and it's the same. It's Six Nations. It's always an interesting time. And at the recent Rugby World Cup, we were in Belfast for the Scotland-Ireland game. Ooh. And I must have been the only person in all of Belfast that was wearing a Scotland jersey. But got some really interesting responses from it, so it was good. But similarly, I also studied law before going on to theology, so... But where did you first encounter the work of both George MacLeod and Dietrich Bonhoeffer? Because that's the kind of subject of your book. So what drew you to their work?
Well, I often tell this story as a warning to students in their third year in the university, because I was given Bonhoeffer as a random allocation in a class on 20th century theology. And everyone was given one theologian to go and read about and then come back and present to the class. And I did that, and at the end of that session, I then said, oh, I'm going to write my essay on the guy that I've done that work on. And then that led on to a master's, when I wrote an extended essay on Bonhoeffer, and that led on to my master's dissertation being on Bonhoeffer, and that led on to ending up doing PhD research and then the book on Bonhoeffer. So it started with a random allocation from a lecturer in Cardiff University, and it became a lifelong kind of passion and companion. The stuff with George MacLeod was different insofar as it wasn't a connection with George as much as it was with the Iona community. I had known a little bit about Iona, but not very much. And when I was starting to train for ministry, I had grown up in a kind of Reformed Presbyterian tradition. I had gone into a kind of more evangelical, charismatic Baptist tradition. And in the early to mid-1990s, was starting to explore other things. I was deeply kind of engaged with that emerging Celtic stream of spirituality at the time. And that's what led me towards an interest in Iona. It was one of the names and the places that kept popping up in the literature. And John Bell from the Iona community came down to our Anglican college in Cardiff and did a Lenten kind of retreat day, and I went along to it. Many of the things that he said resonated with me along the way. One of the things he did was he talked about prayer. And he gave the example of the kind of Reformed Presbyterian big prayer that is still very, very well used, where the pastor, the minister, will maybe do 10 minutes of prayer that covers everything. And I thought, oh, wow, he has been to my church where I grew up. That's what my prayer life sounded like. And then he used that to kind of expand on how different prayers might be. And at the end of that, I had a conversation with John about prayer and about worship. And he said, oh, we have a worship week on Iona. If you want to come and do music and worship on Iona for a week, do that. And so I went away and applied, and it was all full up, and there was no sense of ever being able to come. And then the week before, somebody dropped out. I got a phone call from the community office in Glasgow, and they said, if you want to come, you can come. And so off I went to Iona for that week. I had a background in music as well, so I went along to do the music and the worship, and that's where the community interest really began. It's also where I met my wife. That was another benefit to that. But that's where the commencement with the Iona community began. Started with that thing of Celtic spirituality, but I soon realized that there was an overlap between what I was reading and doing with Bonhoeffer, what I was experiencing and seeing in the life of the community. And that really was the bringing together. The Iona community used to have, it still talks about bringing together prayer and politics, work and worship, the sacred and the secular. And that's what Bonhoeffer was trying to do in bringing together the old Lutheran idea of the two kingdoms, where he was very keen to say Christ is Lord both of church and the world. And that's what I was seeing in the community as well, that sense of how do we bring together these two diverse places of the sacred and the secular. So those were the two ways into that.
Yeah, and that definitely seems to be part of the life of MacLeod as well. Obviously, a very committed Presbyterian Church of Scotland minister who, in the early days of the Iona community, viewed it as part of a training ground for ministers within the church. But he was also very much drawn to evangelical and charismatic movements in a way later on. So you can see that sort of change within him and that drawing in of the Celtic traditions too, and exploring the history that in a very ecumenical way as the Iona community has become. But obviously today we're discussing the book which intersects both of these thinkers, The Melodies of a New Monasticism. And from what I understand, this was part of your doctoral research and writing that was then published in this book. But what inspired you to do your PhD on this, and how did it become a book?
Yeah, so I think what inspired me is, so Moltmann is often credited as a theologian whose methodology is curiosity. And I think that's probably what inspired me too. There is a curiosity at my heart to kind of explore how other people have encountered and experienced and expressed and shared God. So I think that is how that began. I think all of these things begin with a longing, with a desire, with some sense of what have I seen that attracts me. And so I think both MacLeod and the Iona community and what Bonhoeffer was doing was creating this sense of community, creating a way of living with one another. Bonhoeffer writes this up in his little book, Life Together. And I think that's what drew me was, what is the community life of church to look like? That was the first drawing into the kind of research.
Yeah, that's great. And obviously, you've already mentioned that a lot of the draw towards the community was the ways that they've expressed worship and music within church life and community. And as the title of the book alludes to, music is a central piece of the argument that you make in the book. So you talk about Bonhoeffer and MacLeod having a polyphonic vision of Christian community. So what do you mean by this?
Yeah, so it's a phrase that's taken from Bonhoeffer, and it's taken from very late on in Bonhoeffer's life. So it's from his writings from prison, when he's writing personal letters and reflections and musings on what the church might look like post-war. And he has talked about, and this is where the connection between MacLeod and Bonhoeffer begins, I think, although they never actually met. I think there are ideas around in the ether at the time, and I think they were both tapping into those ideas. He talks about a polyphonic Christology. So his reflection on Christ is going back to that Chalcedon definition of Jesus as being fully human and fully divine. And sometimes I think We use this phrase zero-sum understandings, where there's either, you know, there's more of one thing and less of the other, and you're either building the wall out of bricks or you're building it out of wood, and it's one or the other. And I think in his early life, Bonhoeffer lived out of that kind of zero-sum expression. He very early on, when he was a very talented musician himself, and I think he kind of left music behind to some extent to focus on being a theologian. When he was invited to be the leader of the seminary in Finkenwalde, he was in a romantic relationship, and he left that behind to go and focus on doing the work in the seminary. And I think there were times in his life when he said, this is an either or, and I must choose which path to follow. And I think when he's in prison, he begins to realize that might not be the case, that it might be possible to hold things in tension. It might be possible to live out a paradox and hold these things together. And his way into that, he's always been fascinated by Christology. Haunting question in prison is, who is Christ for us today? And I think when he sees in that Chalcedon definition is a Christ who is not a zero-sum option. It is not 51% of deity and 49% of humanity, and or we go up one or down. He sees it as the fullness, 100% of both. And I think he then begins to see that as a model. And certainly I want to see that as a model for how we can do community. And he draws the analogy between that Christology and what he sees in Bach, in the Art of Fugue, but in music generally, this idea that you can have multiple notes sounding at the same time, and none of those notes seem to silence the other. None of them want to dominate the other. None of them want to be exclusive. So we just don't want one voice in the music. We want all the voices of the choir singing, whether it's sopranos, tenors, altos, basses, or all the instruments from the orchestra. All the instruments in the band all playing together, because they all bring something different, but they are all focused on a communal expression of something that is greater than the sum of their parts. And his kind of way into thinking about all of this is through polyphony, through this idea of a polyphonic Christ, where melodies and counter melodies are woven together. And he does this, he says, you know, with a view to understanding Christ in the world. And he says the love of God is something that is not about diminishing our love for the world. We must love the world more by loving God. So it's bringing together those two realms again and saying, this is how it works, that the melodies of the world and the melodies of the sacred and the secular interweave and enhance one another. And they are distinct and different, as we see in the life of Christ, the deity and the humanity, and yet they are one. So that's his way into thinking about using this musical metaphor for understanding what's going on in Christ, and therefore what is going on in the church as the community, the concrete expression of the community of Christ.
Yeah, and Bonhoeffer obviously speaks of Christ's reality, or the Christus Wirklich, and that there's not this separation between the secular and the sacred. And similarly, there isn't this distinction between necessarily action and contemplation. And you see the same thing in the Iona community, where like in the abbey, you have the stone statues of the cat and the monkey reflecting the Absolutely. Via activa and the via contemplativa, of the active and the contemplative way. And when Bonhoeffer is talking about that polyphony as a musical image of both Christology and the Christian life, he seems to bring together those different ideas. But when we're thinking today about how we do that, because I think for me anyway, there's a tendency as someone who's very theological to focus more on the Christological, on the theological, on that contemplative part, and neglect the side of action, of actually taking time to pray and engage with God or discover what God's will is in this situation, in terms of Bonhoeffer's like responsible action. But how do you think that we can best do that? And how can this analogy of polyphony help us engage more with both that contemplative and that active way of Christian life?
Yeah, I wish we had evidence that Bonhoeffer had been to the Abbey and had seen that those little statues are the monkey and the cat, the contemplative and the active. He didn't, but he did say something very similar. He did write a letter on the time of the baptism of his godson, and say that the church in the future would be limited to two things. It would be limited to the life of worship, to the life of prayer, and to the life of acting justly for other people. And in those two things, those become, certainly in the book, I take those two as the countermelodies to this idea of Christ. The polyphonic Christ gives you the contemplative or the worshipful life. And in that, I look at prayer, I look at our hymnody, I look at ecumenism, and I look at a life of healing, which is another great stream of the witness of the Iona community. Mm. But I also say these are I use the phrase that these are fragmented epiphanies of what we see of Christ in our midst. And we see those other fragmented epiphanies in the world too. And in the book, I talk about the fragmented epiphanies in terms of work for peace, in terms of work for justice. And I think you use economic justice, and I use racial justice, and then also about the integrity of creation. And Bonhoeffer says that you can participate in the life of God, but not without life in the world. And you can participate in the life of the world, but not without participating in the life of God. And it's about bringing those two realms together. It's about the monkey and the cat. It's about the active and the contemplative. And it's about, well, I was going to say it's about building the kingdom and building community in all those places. But I think, and we have talked a little bit about George MacLeod, but I also want to mention Ralph Morton, who was kind of also very much involved in the early development of the Iona community. I think Ralph Morton kind of warned us against the idea of building the community. And in the same way as Bonhoeffer said, we don't build, we enter into what God has already called us into. So these things are already there, and it takes maybe the pressure off us to kind of do these things. But it also creates a different spirituality. It's a spirituality that even in its activism is saying, what has God already revealed? What is the song that God has already sung, and how do I hear it, and how do I add my voice to that, rather than how do I create something from nothing? So it's very much a case of us joining in to the performance that God is already revealing in the world, and it's about us being attentive to where those melodies are heard. So that for me has been, and about that idea of performing what God is already performing. Stanley Hauerwas talked about worship as the performance before the performance, so that we rehearse in worship how we are going to behave ethically in the world when we leave the sanctuary. And I think that idea of performance, not as something that is showy, oh, look at me, but something that is about adding our voices, adding our music to the performance that God already conducts in the symphony of creation. That's what the spirituality that attends to that, I think.
Yeah, and you've already mentioned a little bit about where they intersect, but I'd love for you to go a little bit deeper in talking about where MacLeod's thought intersects with Bonhoeffer's. Obviously, you've said they never met, but there certainly is that affinity there, that relation that's there between their theologies and their thought. But can you talk a little bit more on that?
Yeah, I think maybe this idea that was in the ether at the time was this idea of a new monasticism. Bonhoeffer famously writes to his brother and talks about the renewal of the church coming from a new monasticism that has nothing in common with the old monasticism other than this commitment to living out the Sermon on the Mount. And in that phase of time when he moves from being a theologian to being a Christian, and he comes out of that time in Union Seminary with that renewed commitment to living out the ideals in a concrete way, that he sees is going to be in within this new monasticism. And I think George MacLeod, without using that word, is thinking and picking up the same thing. Looking at the 1930s, he talked about that experience of folk who would pass by church and say, oh, that's not for the likes of us. And he was passionate about how would church be for the likes of everyone. And one of the ways of doing that was in this community, and this community that very clearly, because he was accused, wasn't he, of leading it halfway to Rome and halfway to Moscow, this communism and Catholicity that he wanted to do. But yet within that, there is this sense of gathering people, of ministers and training, and gathering the craftsmen and putting them together to learn from one another, to experience the differences of one another, and to live by a common rule of life. And I think that's a very important insight from MacLeod, where we have this rule of life. And as we know within the community, the rule of life has moved. It has evolved over time. I joined the community at a time when it was a fivefold rule, and I can't think of it anything other than as a fivefold rule, even though I think it's 7 or 8 years we've been a fourfold rule. But that rule of life, which within the Iona community is about commitment to prayer and worship, to commitment of reading scripture and other helpful spiritual material, to accounting for our time, for accounting for our money, and accounting for our relationships with one another. That kind of authentic life is exactly the same thing that Bonhoeffer is trying to do in Finkenwalde. And I think it is what speaks to people, or to many people today, because it's not about a statement of belief. It's about how do I, in my Baptist tradition, we have a tradition of covenantal living, where we promise to walk with and watch over one another. And it's that same thing about how do we live an authentic Christian life, and how are we responsible for one another in that life. And I think MacLeod certainly had the insight of that. And he might not have called it a new monasticism, but he had this idea that a rule of life by which we account to one another for how well we're doing, not as a time to tell one another off and say, oh, you haven't lived well enough, but as a chance to kind of be real and authentic about the struggles that we have as well as the successes. I'm always struck by not so much what George MacLeod said about the rule, but about what Kathy Galloway, a former leader, said about the rule in her little book. She says, it's not about me keeping the rule, but it's how the rule keeps me. And I think that's deeply significant for how we seek to live just an authentic life that takes seriously, how am I a worldly disciple? And I think, you know, if people say to you, are you a worldly Christian? It's often meant as a criticism. And, you know, if you are worldly, somehow you can't be a Christian. And those are back to that zero sum game thing. If the more worldly you are, the less of a disciple you are. But I think what MacLeod wanted to do, what the Iona community witnesses, and what Bonhoeffer's vision was for disciples to be worldly, that matter matters, that the world matters, and that if Christ is Lord of all, then Christ is Lord of the material world as well as the spiritual. So, and I think MacLeod saw that in all sorts of ways, and had the privilege, I guess, of a long life where he got to see that manifest in different ways within the community in a way that Bonhoeffer didn't.
Yeah, and I suppose the Iona community at the time was one of many different ecumenical or evangelistic style movements that were trying more to engage the laity in the church community and in being involved. And similarly, it makes me think of some of Bonhoeffer's idea of like the cheap and costly grace, and how these are not just concepts which are focused on involving individuals within the laity to be more pious or more devoted to the church, but rather actually trying to engage the church in fostering the type of community that would allow for lay people to be involved, that isn't just the Sunday worship or Sunday church service, but where that community is active and living. But do you see that connection there as well between engagement with lay people and Bonhoeffer's idea of cheap and costly grace, but also his thoughts on life together?
Yeah, I think it's very important that when we talk about communities that enable the laity to participate, that it's not something that the clergy control and say, oh, well, we'll invite you to do the reading, or we'll invite you to do a prayer, and we'll kind of make sure that we carefully curate and control the space. But it is being honest that these fragments of epiphany that people encounter throughout their daily week in the various places where they are involved, whether it's in family life or in work life or in their leisure activities, these are genuine expressions of an encounter with a Christ for us today. And those need to be gathered into our understanding of the revelation of Christ, and worship maybe is the place where those are gathered in. And then they are released to send us back out into fresh expressions of that. And I think both the Iona community and Bonhoeffer see that as an important, and I don't think Bonhoeffer gets the chance to see that evolve into the kind of lay and clergy community that the Iona community and other communities have become. But I think very importantly at the heart of it is this sense of we are all Christ bearers, and our obligation is to discover how Christ, and that the poet says, you know, how Christ plays in 10,000 places. And it's to discover those different fragments and gather them into our understanding and our expression, our experience of God.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much for this conversation today. I've really enjoyed it. But if people are wanting to read your book, where can they get it? And if they want to engage with your work more broadly, then where can they connect with you?
Well, the book is published from SCM now, Whitfield Stock in America, but also with SCM in the UK. And I guess it's available in all good bookshops. It's been out a while now, and on other places that are available online, no doubt, to purchase the book. I don't have kind of a massive online presence to kind of run things, but if people are interested, they can certainly email me at the Cardiff Baptist College, and I'm more than happy to converse with people, and more than happy, I have done kind of led retreats on this and things like that, so more than happy if people want to get in touch with those kinds of things. Yeah,
that's great. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you ever so much for the conversation. I have very much enjoyed it too.